This is the Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. Last May, when we put the Friday Show on hiatus, things were very different. With case counts down and vaccination rates against COVID-19 going up, we felt like the summer was going to feel something like normal. But that changed with the Delta variant, and we're currently experiencing the worst time in this pandemic. I just added up the reported deaths related to COVID-19 statewide this week, and it's 157 people who've lost their lives in Oregon because of the coronavirus. Dr. Patrick Ludke with Lane County Public Health is here with us, and we thank you so much for joining us at KLCC.
Thank you, Rachel. So nice to be back at Mission Control at KLCC.
Well, I'm sorry the circumstances aren't different. This is a tough time right now, I'm sure, for public health and for caregivers in our area. Can you talk just a little bit about where we are right now? What happened?
I am happy to do so. I think to put it into context, and the earlier comments from Angela Kellner's reporting and yours says it pretty well. But, you know, back in November, December, January, we got 1,000 new cases roughly every 13 days. And that went on for 11 straight weeks, actually from November 11th to January 28th. And now we're getting 1,000 cases in 5 days. So, you know, significant more infectious pressure in the community. And almost all of those cases are the Delta variant. And it's just a miserable actor. And we don't have every piece of data we'd like to know about the Delta variant, but it is about 200 times more transmissible. 200%. That's not 200 times. 200% more transmissible than the original, what we call the wild type, you know, the original strain that came from Wuhan, China. So it's just a virus that's mutated and it's gotten much worse.
And how are, how are hospitals doing here in our area? I know they have, the National Guard is now helping with, tasks so that healthcare providers are freed up to do more. What does it look like in the hospital right now?
They are quite pressured. You're absolutely right. And, you know, what I would say is when a hospital group, so for example, Peace Health, has suspended all elective procedures, something is up. That is, from a financial standpoint, that is a big part of their financial pipeline, elective procedures. From a patient standpoint, you know, people are in pain. They need a new hip or a new knee or some other procedure. And those are all non-life-threatening, non-emergent types of procedures are all on hold because the hospital is full of COVID patients, and there's not room for these elective procedures. So we're thankful that our hospitals have worked so hard to be able to withstand this onslaught of COVID patients, but they are really pressured now.
And just to, before we get to some questions from listeners, I know there's been an incentive for people to get the vaccine, and that is Lane County Public Health's having one more clinic with that incentive.
Oh, yes, indeed. Thank you for that nudge. So we have another clinic tonight from 2 to 7 p.m., so it goes till 7 p.m. tonight, and we are giving away $50 gift cards for all first and second doses, and that is at the Lane Event Center or where we had the county fair on 13th in Eugene. And we're also offering third doses for the immunocompromised there, and walk-ins are welcome. So please, if you are interested in vaccination, head over there tonight before 7 p.m.
All right, let's go to some questions from KLCC listeners. Here's a voicemail. This is asking about the length of exposure that could lead to infection with the coronavirus.
This is Richard. I live in Yahats. I have a question about how long of a contact with people do we have to worry about exposure. We get a lot of tourists coming through, and so many people are kind of staying inside their homes because they didn't want to get close to the tourists that have been coming through. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate that question, and gosh, I sure like Yahats. I bet he likes living there, too.
Yeah.
So the data that we've been getting since we last talked about this really has not changed. So we know that the risk increases significantly for close contact within 6 feet or less with a positive case for 15 minutes or more. So, you know, those little walk-bys when you're out on the beach in Yahats or when you're on a hiking trail where you're walking by somebody and you're in their airspace for, you know, 1, 2, 5, 10 seconds, those are not significant exposures. 15 minutes or more, 6 feet or less with a positive person with COVID.
And we've heard that the Delta variant is as contagious as the chickenpox. So how can you explain that? How contagious is chickenpox?
So the way that we look at this, Rachel, really is it's kind of mathematical. There's a mathematical equation, which is hard to do on a radio show. But long story short, we look at one case of whatever the infectious agent is, bacteria, virus, etc., produces how many new ones in a susceptible population. So influenza, typically one case will produce two new cases. So we call its reproduction number 2.0, just two. And early on, when COVID first started spreading, it was between two and three. One case would produce two to three new ones, and everybody on Earth was susceptible because nobody had ever seen it before. So the whole, 7+ billion people on the planet were susceptible, most likely. Then the Delta variant came along, and it's more likely that it's in the 5 to 8 range. So one case of the Delta variant in a susceptible population will produce 5 to 8 more cases, which is why we've gone from 20, 30, 40 cases a day to, as you mentioned, 200 a day every day for several weeks now. It's very, very transmissible, and we don't have enough immune people. We have a lot of people who got vaccinated, some people who've been infected before and have some immunity too, but we still have a lot of susceptible people.
But all the measures like wearing masks, hand washing, keeping that physical distance, those all still work?
They do indeed. And in fact, if you just look at what we in epidemiology call a natural experiment, as opposed to a planned experiment, like a clinical trial where somebody gets, one dose of a drug and somebody gets another dose or placebo, these natural experiments are occurring all the time. We have people with the Delta variant, we get a positive test, they clearly have Delta, and they end up in a clinic or they end up in a hospital. And the protections that we put in place for healthcare workers are still preventing transmission of the Delta variant to those people working closely with those patients. So, yes, those measures, wearing a mask, doing as much physical distance as you can, washing your hands whenever you touch high-touch surfaces, those are still making a difference.
Here's an email. This is from Brett in Fall Creek, who says, a lot of people are saying, what's the point of getting vaccinated? Because fully vaccinated people can get and transmit COVID. Aside from the obvious fact that vaccinated COVID patients are extremely unlikely to need to be hospitalized, do we know if COVID variants are equally able to develop amongst the vaccinated population versus unvaccinated? So I guess that's kind of a two-part question.
It is, and it's insightful as well. So thank you for the question. So what I would say is, first of all, the key point is exactly what he said, that these vaccines are not perfect, but if you get vaccinated with one of the approved vaccines, your chances of getting severe disease, meaning disease requiring hospitalization and maybe an ICU on a ventilator type of hospitalization, is really, really low. It's not zero, but it's markedly decreased, 90% plus decreased. So that's great. It prevents severe disease. However, the Delta variant is very transmissible, as we just talked about, and some people who have been vaccinated with two doses have had breakthrough infections. They've had an infection despite getting vaccinated. Those infections are typically very mild, and that's a big benefit. There are other benefits, though. So, for example, the longer the virus circulates, the more opportunity it has to mutate and find, a chink in our armor, find another way to infect us, find another way to get around all those measures that our body is making, antibodies on its own, or that we're getting from the vaccine, or that we're using for our monoclonal treatments, our antiviral treatments. So that is a challenge, and we're going to continue to see variants if we don't get more people who are to be immune.
So we got this email from Craig, and he says, our strategy for defeating the pandemic seems to be to let it get so bad that finally unvaccinated people will become concerned for their own health and get vaccinated. Clearly, this is not working, nor is politely asking them to get vaccinated for the public good. So my question is, when do we stop pandering to the unvaccinated? People have the right to not get vaccinated, but they do not have the right to open their front door and mingle in the public sphere.
Oh, my. So I think it's a good question. I would say that on the good side, every coin has two sides, right? So the good side is we've seen a pretty significant increase in vaccination in July and August. After, a huge drop-off in May, June, when many people thought, we're done with this. So that's good, but I think it gets to the questioner's comment that when things get bad, more people seem all of a sudden to be interested. So that's one point. Another point is a fair number of employers, well within their legal right, are mandating vaccine for their staff. And we've seen, you know, one of our hospital groups do that recently. We've seen a fair number of other non-healthcare related agencies do that, and they can do that. So that is helpful, certainly, to decrease the infectious risk and improve the immunity level in our community.
So here we have a question from Ainsley. This is about boosters, and she sent this email. My husband is 80 years old and has a manageable but not curable lung condition. When can he get the third COVID booster vaccine?
I think that's a very good question. If he fits into the category of someone who is immunocompromised, and some severe diseases, it doesn't have to be something like leukemia and being on chemotherapy. Some severe diseases also include, you know, a component of immunocompromise. He could get one now. If his doctor, nurse practitioner, doesn't believe that he fits in that category, the federal government's advisory committee meets on September 17th to look at approving a booster, the third dose, and we will know right after that. I suspect that there will be approval at that time. So in this, you know, quite quickly after that, so in this month, most likely he will be eligible.
And we did hear from a couple of healthcare workers who had the same question about when they might be eligible to get a booster. Would that apply to them once that approval happens?
Yes, it would indeed. So September 17th, if you're interested, those are public meetings. Everybody can you know, listen to them, watch them on their TV screen if they'd like. They of course can't usually talk, but they can put in comments in the chat and such. And I would, you know, nudge people to do so if they're very interested. So September 17th will be the date, and the experts will be debating it back and forth from academia, from the private sector, from hospitals, physicians, etc. So look for that.
Okay. Well, let's hear from this caller is from Corvallis, wondering about the risks to her as her granddaughter heads back to in-person school.
This is Virginia calling from Corvallis. I'm wondering if I need to isolate from my six-year-old granddaughter when she goes back to in-person school. I'm 80 years old. I was fully vaccinated in March. But I have no way that I know of, anyway, of knowing how robust my immunity is. Thank you.
Gosh, I think it's a really good question. And this is an area where we don't have all the data we wish that we had. Mm-hmm. We know that some people have had a decline in their antibody immunity. But that is only one part of our immune system. We have those cells, they're white blood cells called B cells, B as in boy, and their job is to make antibodies that are tailored to whatever is attacking us. You know, sometimes it's a virus, a bacteria, even a cancer. And then there's another part of the immune system that's kind of like a little Pac-Man. You know, it goes around and chomps on things. Those are called the T cells. And the research data, when these vaccines were approved, were predominantly based on showing that therapeutic levels of neutralizing antibodies were created. But they also did research into T cells and that other type of immunity. We call it cellular immunity. And that immunity, we just don't have enough data. So even if her antibodies have dropped a little bit, she has those other white blood cells that'll probably kick in. So I wish we knew more. But the first thing I would say is get in line to get your booster dose after September 17th. The second is that those short, you know, getting a hug from your grandchild, being around your grandchild for short periods of time is not going to put you at an increased risk. Those less than 15 minutes, you know, stay away from that. And if the child is sick with COVID-compatible symptoms, definitely stay away. Hopefully the grandchild is not. And I wouldn't say that you need to have complete isolation. You know, just be as safe as you can. And if the child is sick, do the appropriate masking and try to do social distancing. Otherwise, a hug here and there, you know, a short dinner together, those kind of things are fine.
This is the Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald with Lane County Public Health's Dr. Patrick Ludke. And we just touched on school starting, and it is starting next week here in Lane County. How prepared do you feel schools are for kids coming back to the classroom?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those challenges, right? You know, this is the balance of kids needing schooling and socialization and et cetera, and managing the other side of that is the infectious risk. So schools have been working really, really hard. Public health has been working with schools. They've been working with their school-based health center staff, et cetera. And we're going to see some cases. That's just what happens when people get together and talk. We are hopeful that the systems we put in place will pick up cases very quickly. That includes, you know, weekly testing of kids and teachers and volunteers. And we'll pick them up quickly enough such that they won't, you know, snowball into large outbreaks. So, again, I think we're all expecting some increase in cases, but hopefully not huge increases.
There's been some talk of delaying the beginning of school while we are in this surge. Do you think that is a good idea, or do you think that, I mean, how do we know how long to delay school?
I guess yeah, would be a question. I think it's a good question. And so the beauty of the new paradigm in Oregon is that there's more local control, right? Earlier on, it was the governor's executive orders for the entire state. And in pandemics, sometimes everybody's affected at high levels. Other times, you have, you know, one region that has a ton of disease and another doesn't have nearly as much, and you need to have some kind of flexibility. So many jurisdictions have high level of disease, and that means we have to do protection. And some that have really high level of disease and really low levels of vaccination would probably be better off to delay school until the biggest part of the surge is over. Some of the southern counties, Jackson, Josephine County, they're doing just that. Their vaccination rates might be only 40% in their community as opposed to 70 up here in Lane County. And they're at much higher risk, and it's wise to do that sort of thing. But here, you know, we're a little better off, still not as well off as we'd like to be.
And you've been working with the schools, advising them on how to keep the kids safe, and the staff and teachers.
We have indeed. We have an entire schools team, both for the K through 12 schools as well as for the colleges and universities. And we have been working. I wouldn't say nonstop, but gosh, 7 days a week, trying to make this as safe as possible.
I just want to touch on one more thing with this topic, which is that there's also a call for requiring schools to have lunch outdoors, which would help with, you know, that moment when kids have their masks off. And it sounds like it's tough for all the schools to have the same rules just because of their, you know, different circumstances. But do you think that is a good idea when possible?
Yeah, I think we need to take advantage of the outside air. It's a little smoky today, but we do need to take advantage of the dilution that happens outside. You know, I mean, it dilutes the viral load in the air massively. So it holds for outside of school, too. If you're going to have a family get together, it would be safest to have it outdoors and take advantage of the nice weather that we have until the rains come up this fall.
Well, here's a question we got from Dean and Annie, who say there's a coming indoor gathering of well over 100 people. Proof of vaccination is required. With the expanding COVID surge, could one expect this event to be relatively safe for all attending? That's their email, and I'm not sure if they're referring to the football game or something else coming up. But what are your thoughts?
So we would be happy to help them. They can contact Lane County Public Health, and we'd be happy to help them with infection control measures. They most likely know most of them. We've been living through it for 18 months, and we'd be happy to help. I would say that if they require vaccination, they're not going to have a gigantic wildfire outbreak. There are a few breakthroughs, but it's not going to be a whole lot. And just make sure that they follow the rules. I know over the summer, one of my youngest children is a musician, and there were several outdoor concerts, and I went to see him play as a proud father, and they checked my vaccine card. I have to say, I think I was the only person there with gray hair, but it was really nice to see that these outdoor events in people's backyards and private parties, they were doing a good job. And if they do a good job like that, we're going to have a case or two or three, but we're not going to have those types of society disrupting really large outbreaks.
And with the, for example, the Ducks game is happening at Autzen Stadium tomorrow. Masks are required as well as proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test. How comfortable are you with that going forward?
I'm comfortable with all the work that they've been doing, that we've been doing with them. I know that, you know, it's worth noting what happened last year. They had several home games. I went to every one of those home games. They did not have, you know, a large audience there, right? Not a lot of attendees, but the media was there and some recruiters, et cetera, but not spectators. And only U of O and OSU football teams had no outbreaks of the Pac-12 teams. And that's because they really worked hard and, you know, good for them. Now, it's a little different when you have, you know, thousands of people in there. But They've done a lot to minimize the risk. It's not going to be zero risk, but they've done a lot to minimize the risk. And again, we as a society need to balance not just public health. I mean, you could shut down the whole world, but then what happens with, you know, business, et cetera. So I think the balance is in a pretty good place, and I'm hopeful.
Okay, here's a email question we got from Nathaniel, who was my English professor at the U of O. He says, wants to know about mask types for travel in public confined space for an extended time, like a plane flight of 2 to 5 hours. I've heard or read that it might be more comfortable to wear a K95 type mask with a vent rather than unvented regular fitting mask. So if the wearer is vaccinated, would the breathing out be safe and not put others at risk? And would such wearers not reduce their protection?
Yeah, this is a challenging area. What I would say as a preamble first is many people don't use masks correctly. We saw that after the first SARS-CoV-1 back in 2003. There were multiple studies done in that decade, and people use them too long. They're saturated with water. They don't filter well. They don't cover their nose and their mouth, etc. People are better now, but just keep that in mind. Use them appropriately. And don't use the same mask and soil it and use it for weeks and weeks. Wash them every day. Have several you rotate in. Number two, the whole valve issue is a challenge. We tend not to recommend them overall because there are multiple types. Some people will accidentally leave the valve open and then they're just breathing outdoor air. And the work of breathing is markedly less and they think, wow, this is pretty good. Well, that's because the valve is open and you're just breathing outdoor air and you're also spewing out whatever virus you might have if you are infected. So they're a challenge and they are not recommended by public health. And then finally, in public spaces, you know, a cloth mask, a well-designed and well-used cloth mask is fine. In the clinical spaces, we also want that liquid barrier between the cloth. So, you know, so-called surgical masks have another level of protection because sometimes, you know, clinical care is unpredictable. People might cough or vomit on you, and you need that liquid protection too. So I hope that answered the question.
Okay, we've just got 30 seconds left, but do you have a sense that this surge is going to end soon? And if so, when?
Oh, boy. The toughest question for last.
Quickest question, yeah.
Yeah, so it will end. I mean, it absolutely will. The question is when, and that's your question. I think it's a good one. I suspect within the next 2 to 4 weeks, hopefully within two, we will see a real signal in the data that says we have peaked and we're started on the downside. The challenge is it's not going to be a really steep kind of Spencer Butte climb steep. It's going to be more shallow. So it's going to be with us for a while. And we're hoping by Thanksgiving, we're in a very different place.
Well, thank you so much. Dr. Patrick Ludke is Lane County's chief medical officer, and we so appreciate having you back again here at KLCC.
Always a pleasure, Rachel. Thank you.
I'm Rachel McDonald. This is the Friday show on KLCC. We'll make this episode available to listen to again at our website, klcc.org. And you can also find the Friday show on NPR One and the KLCC mobile app. Thanks again for joining us for the Friday show on KLCC.